Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Welcome up, Stacks and Jacks. After my Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 78. NASDAQ Futures up 300. God, does this sound familiar, Carl, or what?
Just a little, you know? Just a little.
I am.
Why am I surprised by any of this?
I don't know. I tell you what, if I hear one more person say how much Hunter Biden stole, I'm gonna have to reach for the air sickness bag. These guys just covered it this weekend.
Well, you know, this is the real problem here, Chief, is that this kind of stuff has, when you don't punish criminality within a system, and it doesn't matter who's doing it, right? When you don't punish it over a period of time, you get more of it. So it's like anything else. Whatever you incentivize, you get more of. Whatever you punish, you get less of. And, you know, in the context of economics, it's whatever you subsidize, you get more of. Whatever you tax, you get less of, right? And so if you want to punish people for entrepreneurship, you set up a system that essentially steals the second $25,000 that they make because it destroys their Obamacare subsidies.
Well, the entrepreneurship becomes getting a favoritism from government. That's the entrepreneurship.
Well, right. But the point is entrepreneurship is destroyed because actual honest work has a 100% tax rate on the second, effective 100% tax rate, very close to it. I did the math on this back when Obamacare was originally passed, and it was the reason I shut everything down that I was doing. Okay? And I said, look, my two options are, one, find some way to cheat, therefore I'm no longer at risk. Okay? Which, you know, I mean, that's one reaction, right?
Yeah.
And the second is spend, you know, let's say that I think I can make $250,000. Well, I'm going to spend a month of my year working for zero return. Zero.
Yep.
Literally. Okay. I'm not doing that. That's not going to occur. So, therefore, those are my two options.
Well, what's... I agree. The only thing that, I don't think we ever disagree on is I think you need crime and punishment because there's always an outlier, but you also reach the point where the lack of morality is if you're not cheating, you're not trying, there's no filter on the cheating because there's no other God, shall we say, other than the law and your risk of getting caught. The risk of getting caught appears to be much less the more connected you are.
Right.
And that becomes a big problem. And you know, if this country goes down, it's not going to be an invading army. It's going to be our own decadence. And when we're well on the way.
Oh, yeah. But again, this is not a new problem. Okay. I mean, what we have seen over successive administrations and over successive years is that you want to know where the healthcare issues are, they fundamentally, this is where they are, okay? This is the fundamental problem within the entire system. And if you want to know where the issue is with education and its cost, at the college level, it's here. You want to know where the problem is with the primary and secondary education within most of the states, and why back in the 1990s I had 3/4 of the people that came into my office trying to get an entry-level job that had high school diplomas, and they could not do addition, subtraction, multiplication, division.
Well, again, it's worse now.
Well, I understand that, but I just sent you a thing, you know, I think it was yesterday.
Now, the right thing to say is that the human capital is degraded.
Well, human capital has been destroyed.
Yep.
To a large degree, and the answer of industry, rather than cut that crap out, quit stealing, okay, has been, we'll just move to India, or we'll just move to China, or we'll just move to... The problem is, it's not just local to the United States, okay, because moving it to India or China is a cheat, too.
Right.
All right, because what is their, the essence of their so-called miracle? Their essence of the so-called miracle is to poison the air, land, and water. That's why it's cheaper. And, oh, by the way, abuse the people, too, at the same time. And so, you know, so that's screwing everybody twice. All right, all in the name of a buck.
Yep. Hey, for those of you who might not know how we got off on this tangent, we're doing the show Friday morning, and all of a sudden we noticed, hey, wow, we're talking about the Friday before a 3-day weekend, normally a sleepy day, and all of a sudden your S&P futures are down 80 points. And then it comes across the tape that comes across afterward, of course, that Trump is talking about a 50% tariff on Europe, and oh, by the way, wants Apple to make all their phones here. So the S&P's dropped 80 points. They worked their way back during the day to being down, I don't know, 40, 50 on the close. So now over the weekend, if you knew that even 2 minutes before, you did very well. Now today, over the weekend, guess what? He's pushing the tariffs off on Europe. We're back up the exact 80 points. It's the most crooked stuff I've ever seen in terms of, you know, people trading. These announcements are designed, it appears, to move the market. Now you can be a big Trumper and say, oh no, it's all part of his strategic plan. He's cutting a deal. You know what?
Right.
If you want to believe that, I got a bridge for sale for you.
Yeah. I said this originally. Back during Trump's first term, and I've pointed this out many times in other contexts, not related to the president. If you're going to, you know, if you get me mad enough that I'm going to come after you, all right, for whatever reason, you really get me angry, and I'm going to sue you or, you know, whatever, all right, you're not going to get any threats. You're not going to get any warning. I'm just going to do it. If I was president of the United States and you got me pissed off enough through whatever it was that you did that I thought that you were absolutely in the wrong, okay, which is the argument about this whole trade thing, right? You're screwing America, all right? You can agree or disagree that, in fact, they're screwing America. However, if you really believe it, you don't threaten to do it. You do it, and then your baseline negotiating position is from where you are now, all right? And that's and no, you're not dropping it. You're not putting it back. You're not obeying it for, you know, putting it in abeyance for 90 days or 30 days or whatever to have a conversation. No, it's, I fixed it. Now, if you'd like to argue that I fixed it incorrectly, then we can have that debate. We'll have that discussion. We'll do this. We'll meet. We'll do this. But until we come to agreement, it stands. And that's the end of it. And if people don't like that, that's too effing bad. And that's the way you handle something like this.
Well, you also have to have some in my world, you have to have some definition of what you're doing. If somebody were to come out, if Carl Denninger was in, you know, doing this and said, okay, China, it's 10% because of your pollution, it's 10% because of child labor, it's 10% because of the Uyghurs. We might argue about the numbers, but at least I know where you're coming from. Don't just lob one out there to somebody where we might have a surplus with, like Australia, and say somehow you're screwing us. By the way, come kiss my ass and make a deal. I don't. I mean, I don't.
I'm okay. Look, as I've said for a very long time, when this whole trade thing started with Trump, I said, look, my base position is that the United States is best off in a situation of autarky because everything gets corrupted through this kind of offshoring process. Now, I used to be much more of a free trade general position, much more of a free trade kind of person, okay? That was, my general position. The argument has always been that trade tends to decrease the risk that two people are going to pick up guns and go shoot at each other. And therefore, beyond the economic impacts, it's good from a geopolitical point of view. Okay, so it has two benefits. I'm not so sure I believe that anymore, because if you look at Ukraine and Russia and Europe and all the energy transmission and stuff that was built up over the space of decades between all of these countries, didn't stop them from shooting each other. And you look at the Arab oil embargo and in the United States, it didn't stop us from very nearly, if you want to count Iraq, didn't stop us from shooting each other twice. So I'm not so sure I believe that argument holds water anymore. I believed it when I was a younger man. I'm not sure I believe it now. And so there are very real reasons from a geopolitics point of view to be self-sufficient. I mean, the idea that you can get bent over the table if there's a war because you can't get antibiotics that sort of thing is so dangerous that I can't stomach that. That's ridiculously dangerous. All right, I mean, leave aside, I can't get missile, I can't get the elements I need to make the GPS chips for my missiles. Okay, I mean that's kind of bad.
Well, I wouldn't have a problem with the penicillin being made, whatever they use now, being made in Canada or Britain or someplace.
Yeah, I'm just. But the thing is why isn't it made here? And one of the things that I found fascinating is the number of articles and noise spewed on CNBC and the other, the other networks about we can't make iPhones in America. We can't make blah, 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 blah in America. Let me tell you a little bit. This is a little off topic, but not really. So I just got here a couple of days ago, a little miniature PC. And the reason is that now I have fiber internet service here. It's faster than my old firewall that, provides protection and routing and VPN service and all that kind of nonsense. And I want that in a separate box than my main computer for a number of reasons, one of which is that it has to come back on if the power goes off. Okay, it is absolutely, this thing has to be an appliance. It has to be like a refrigerator, basically, right? I mean, you have one job, keep the food cool, right? And that's basically what this is. So it has a very different set of requirements than the main computer that that does my file service or any of the other things around the house that do things. And so there are a bunch of Chinesium ones using more modern chips that have more power. Now, I told you, Chief, these guys that had the one that I used to use, they got killed by COVID and then the processor being deprecated by the manufacturer. But they were based out of Switzerland. Okay. Great boxes. I've got a couple of them still here. I used to recommend that people buy them. I never actually resold them because I didn't want to register for sales tax and all the BS that went along with that. But I used these things for years. They have a 10-plus-year run with, helping people put them in, and I used to publish the actual firmware load that you could just plug it in on a SD card and off it goes. Well, so I've been searching for something that has more power but does the same job, and this one shows up here. I go to connect it up and it instantaneously crashes my network switch instantly. All right, I mean, as soon as I plug it in, I hadn't even booted yet. I'm like, what the F is going on here? Well, as it turns out, the network ports on this switch are wired incorrectly. Not only are they wired incorrectly, they're in violation of the standards for Ethernet connections. The way it's done is dangerous. Potentially, now the odds that it's going to bite you in a way that's hazardous to humans is very small, but it's not zero. And that it might destroy some of your other equipment or itself, that risk is extremely real. It's very real. Okay. I'm currently going back and forth with these guys that built this thing, and they're trying to make excuses for it and say, we'll try this. How'd this thing get out of your factory? All right, we're talking about a set of standards, Chief, for wiring these things and how they're supposed to be connected that has stood for several decades.
Well, the idea that people, I mean, it's interesting, you know, we're having this conversation because we had Bill Moriarty on last week, and I think his line was that everybody who worked in those kinds of places with the vagaries and people leaving town and going overseas, one thing every father swore was his kids were never going to be in that kind of environment. And, you know, the idea that, we don't want anybody coming into this country. By the way, somehow or another, if you raise the price of going to pick vegetables from 12 to 15, people from the city are going to flow out there. It's so ignorant, I can't go there. I mean, it's not going to happen. Now, how you go about inspecting places overseas and those kinds of things, but I'll tell you this, the inspections for what goes on here, once you get underneath the regulatory curtain, I own a brokerage firm, my brother and I and other people own a brokerage firm. And every year, before you start the year, the first thing you have to do is pay for a full audit from an independent public accountant. Okay, so we do that. That takes a couple of months. They go through every single thing there is. They couldn't have been out the door 2 days, and the futures group comes in and they spend 2 months here, I guess auditing, I guess harassing, or whatever you want to call it.
They climb up your butt.
Yeah. So they're out for like a week. My brother goes, well, it looks like we're audit free. Now, we haven't had one in 3 years. FINRA calls up, by the way, we're starting your audit. So now it's by the end of May, I think we might be done with three audits.
Yeah.
Now if I would never do this, but boy, oh boy. If I was a type to put my brokerage firm in Bermuda, there is a reason right there. I mean, what are we doing?
Chief, when I don't know if I've related this on the show or not before, but when I was running MCS, we used to get and this is the reason I won't get involved in selling physical products anymore anywhere. Okay, it's the reason I didn't do it. I wouldn't even sell coffee mugs with my site's logo on them when I was in Florida, or T-shirts. And the reason is that when I lived in Chicago and I was running MCS, of course, we did sell physical products because we did data networking. Okay, we had, most people had their own PCs in the early days of the internet, but businesses had to, they wanted leased lines and things like this, right? And, we don't want to go buy that. So, we want you to come in here and install it for us. Well, okay, fine. So we were registered for sales tax and all of this, right? About once a year, the state of Illinois would come into my office and give us a digital rectal exam.
Yeah, oh yeah.
To because apparently they had identified that many people in our particular line of work were cheating. They were using their sales tax exemption number to buy things that were being used internally in the company, which is illegal. Okay. So our line of business was considered high risk, and these guys showed up every single year, and they were jackasses. We did not cheat one penny, all right? But they'd come in there, they'd be, they'd want to see all the invoices for Cisco routers. Where's this serial number? Where's that serial? And of course, we all had it because it's in the computer. Punch it up, da-da-da-da. All right, we sold to this guy. Here's the invoice. There's the sales tax. Here's the check we cut to the state of Illinois to pay it, right? I mean, here it is on the voucher. It's in the ledger. It all ties out. It's all good. But they would come in there and they'd grill Marcus for like a day. Right, he was my number one to handle that stuff. And finally, I told it, this was back when you could smoke inside in Chicago as long as you were in a private office with the door closed.
Oh, yeah.
And so I told Marcus.
Well, I remember when you could smoke walking down the hall, you could do anything you wanted.
Well, but at that time, it was legal. You could smoke inside as long as you were in a private office and the door was closed. And so I told Marcus.
So you kept it all behind the door till you opened the door, then it all spewed out.
Well, that's right. But I said, look, I know you like cigars. I like cigars. I have a little humidor sitting in my office with some really good cigars. I said, so when these guys show up, I am perfectly okay with you coming into my office, grabbing one of those, slicing it, go back in your office, close the door, and see whether or not you can hotbox your office while those guys are in there.
I would have thought that you would have had the chairs outside like Denny Crane and the other guy in Boston Legal after work.
Well, you know, I was polite about it, and, you know, but I worked on the weekends fairly regularly, and so, you know, there was nobody there to piss off then, right? But he started making a practice of this when those guys would show up, and I'm like, look, if you don't like it, that's just too damn bad. I don't care, okay? You guys want to sit here and essentially conduct a harassment campaign? Well, guess what? Two can play that game. So there you go.
Well, we had a real quick, and then I'm going to tell you about, after break, I'm going to tell you about, well, interesting, this was kind of up Carl's alley after this, I went to a funeral on Saturday, not that anybody cares about a funeral, but I go to, but actually very interesting historical type of stuff that I found in this place, and I'll run by you. We had, I think this is before Costco was even big, we were a member of Sam's Club, right?
Right. No. I used to have a Sam's Club membership because we bought printer paper and stuff like that there.
Well, the only issue was Chicago had a big hard on for anything Walmart in the city, right?
Right.
So
you had to go outside the city for it.
So I'd buy when I if I have an appointment somewhere, I'd stop at the Sam's Club in in Hodgkins of all places. How's that for a name of a town? And I'd buy the paper and couple of things of water and whatever you needed and for the office and haul it in and guys meet me downstairs and haul it up and kind of no big deal. All of a sudden some guy shows up from the city, hey, you're buying stuff outside the city.
Now, we're talking about out of shape about the tax.
We're not even talking outside the county, much less outside the state. Of course, there's there's nothing for all the people buying all their crap on Amazon. They're gonna stop in our office. And we had to go through all of our Sam's Club bills, and fortunately the city doesn't have sales tax on food.
Right.
So most of the stuff I bought, the water and the pop and all that stuff was considered, I guess, food. So we ducked under the finable amount by like $50 or something. I'm saying, you got to be kidding me. It's 40 feet. I drove out there to avoid the 1% tax in Chicago. Plus, there was no Sam's in Chicago.
Right. No, well, we used to do that too, but we knew that was a potential issue, and so but we used to buy our community in case you're unaware, community coffee is actually the only decent canned coffee you can get. That if you're going to have some in your break room, and caffeine is a legal performance enhancing substance. We used to buy that out there, but we actually cataloged all the paper and envelopes and that sort of stuff, because that stuff was taxable on the city's schedule.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so that was on our sales tax report. So that was one of the things that they used to come in and, hey, where do you get that paper?
Yeah, you could have a company the size of Amazon come into business by dodging sales tax, and nobody ever went after them.
Oh, yeah, but, and it was, in our case, one of the reasons that we did this is that it was paying the tax, being completely legit, it was a far better deal than, say, calling up Quill and saying, hey, ship us, 10 cases of paper, printer paper. And, it wasn't close.
So what do you think about
we would do a hell of a lot of that sort of stuff.
Real quick, we're talking a little bit about morals. What do you think about our moral man in chief pardoning this Southern sheriff this morning? You get this story? He pardons the guy that was convicted.
Ten years seems like
a while, but we're not talking about a commuted sentence. We're talking about a pardon. The guy evidently was convicted of taking bribes to make rich people deputies.
Well, he was, and the thing is, he was tried and convicted of doing it. Okay, so, I mean, it's not, you know, and of course his argument is, well, you know, they didn't let me, you know, present the evidence that I was innocent. Okay, well, maybe that's true, maybe that's not. I don't know. Okay. However, I am immediately skeptical whenever somebody says, I didn't do it, and the jury says you did. Okay, now, if I can see the evidence, maybe you were railroaded. Maybe. It's possible.
But the way this dude gives out a pardon,
I'm just saying.
It's not I think 10 years is a little too long. He served 4, that's good enough. It's sort of like Blagojevich. Yeah. That part I can get. The idea that he doesn't deserve to spend one day in jail. By the way, that used to be a big thing here. Walter Payton and a lot of guys on the Bears were essentially deputies. So if they were driving fast with a gun in the car, they were able to get off. So, but this is kind of a game that's been going around a while. Mono Post people.
Well, that's the essence of why these guys do this.
Yeah.
Right. It's basically you bought, you know, the poor's version of this is, which by the way doesn't generally work, is this, what was it, the Beneficial Sheriff's Association or some BS like that, that come around, solicit you for donations, and then they give you a window sticker
for
your car. Okay. Which by the way, as far as I know, doesn't actually work.
No, probably doesn't.
But that's how they.
I have policemen's benefit plates on my truck, but I did that because my dad was a policeman, and I actually.
Well, that's a different. That's a different thing. I mean, you're not doing it to try to get out of a ticket.
No, I'm hoping I'm not going to get pulled over because I don't want to get pulled over. You know?
Well, yeah, because you're not speeding or whatever.
Although I do have some stories about that going out to Marengo when I went. We're going to break it out. I'll tell you how I was thinking about my friend Carl and at the funeral.
Oh no.
Yeah. S&P Futures up 84, NASDAQ Futures up 327. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 85. Yeah, remember how they were down 80 on Friday when we did this because of the tariffs? Well, the tariffs are back off, and somebody made 80 points both ways and is already out for the day. That's a hell of a lot easier than as hard as I work for my clients. What if, I could be done for the day and just go play golf and my clients would already be up. That'd be kind of cool. Of course, I don't think these guys do it for clients. I think they do it for themselves. That would just be me. As we go, we have individual stocks. Of course, all the good ones. Meta's up $14. All the ones that we like to have up, we've got Google up 243, Apple up 322. Even though it's still under 200. Now, I'm not so sure. I didn't read. Maybe Carl knows. If Apple was part of this, we're letting them off the tariff because then also part of the announcement on Friday was we want Apple assembling everything here. Now, there's 1.5 million people allegedly in China to support the Apple process. And we'll talk to Carl about how the hell that would work. I mean, one thing to get Apple employees over here, it's quite another to move all those people that allegedly support the thing. Anyway, over in Asia, we've got the... so does my machine here wants to turn. I want you to do some traffic, weather, sports, and then I'll get the rest of the world here.
Absolutely.
Well, here we go. Nikkei up 192.5%. Hang Seng up 99.4%. Shanghai down 6. Call that flat. Mainland China has been... Well, it was up last week, but generally it hasn't been moving all that much. DAX up 176.7, FTSE up 69.8, and Kakaron only up 13.2. They're a laggard over there. On Friday, we did come back some. Dow was only down 256. S&P was down 39 after being down 80 initially. NASDAQ was down 188. They didn't come back as much. They were up and down initially maybe 280. They all came back some on Friday. Bonds, down 4 basis points, 4.47. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.54. Japan down 3 basis points, 1.48. So we've got the 10-year under 4.5. I'm guessing we might have the 30-year under 5.5 this morning, but we will see. Oil down 7 cents, 61.46. Brent is unchanged. Natural gas down 7 cents, 3.26. RBOB unchanged at 2.11. Gold, whack whack this morning. You're down 75 bucks. It's over 2%. The dollar's firming. Softened U.S. trade stand. It's all kind of links together. So if you knew this was coming, you would probably buy the dollar, buy the spoos, sell gold. I mean, this is not that difficult if you know the number. Silver down 56 cents, 33.04. And don't think some of these people don't know how to do this. It's not that hard once you know what you're doing. Dollar broadly firm is the euro is 113.5. It was almost 114. British pound 135.4 was over 136. We've got crypto up 450, 109, 526. The artificial stock keeps going up. Trump's all behind this stuff, too. That's scary. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, and sports, Ricky.
Chief, I would love to, but I actually have a surprise for you. Our friend Joel is actually in the call, and he doesn't seem to have a lot of time, so you want to just go right to him?
Yeah. Joel, you weren't supposed to be here, but here you are.
It was a different date I gave you, Chief.
Oh, all right. Well, you're here.
Okay, yeah. I can just a couple minutes here real quick. I'm a little behind the clock. Nothing but good news out there, Chief.
Well, did you sell Spoo Friday morning on the news and then buy Spoo this morning before
noon? You can't sell in the hole. I mean, there's times to sell, like maybe right now, but you can't sell in the hole like that. To buy the dippers are just relentless. Huge discount. Actually, if you really disseminated that news about Apple, I mean, in the EU thing, which is all of a sudden been reversed, the Apple tweet or whatever on True Social was saying we've had previous conversations about iPhones, so it wasn't anything new. And the market shrugged it off, and then he changed his mind over the weekend on EU tariffs. It's almost so dangerous. I mean, not only to short off the hop, on those big down days, but on long weekends. And you've known for years, Chief, that, there's big moves, G7 moves over the weekend. So I don't personally like these kind of rallies. That doesn't mean I'm shorting into it or liquidating my portfolio. I kind of like to see slow and steady, but who knows what's going to happen on Wednesday, Chief?
Yeah, well, what do you make of the prices scooting up here? Are they going to show up on this month's report or no?
I don't know. You mean for
CPI?
We got a couple. It's not until a few weeks. No, I don't think so yet. I mean, really, have all the tariffs come into effect yet? It's such a muddled situation. I'd be more worried about kind of what's on down the road. Maybe your June numbers or your July numbers. It's all about NVIDIA. We can't do anything with our portfolios. We can't invest. We can't do anything until we find out about NVIDIA earnings.
Yeah, I would say that. Well, I mean, that guy's about as good as there is at touting his firm. So it's not just the NVIDIA, it's the earnings. It's the that guy, whatever it is, they could have no earnings and he's going to make it sound good.
Yeah. Yep, but that's it. That's really all I have on my front. X, you see U.S. Steel, trading up on the partnership. I just don't know. I mean, I don't know what to think about the other steel stocks. So I'm gonna have to do some research on that.
Real quick though, Joel, what does it? I won't say bother you, but does it perplex you that you've got a Nippon is coming in here saying that U.S. Steel needs to have all this investment and they're going to make all this money here in U.S. Steel. Well, don't we supposedly have the finest capital markets in the world? If U.S. Steel had a modernization plan that was going to return all this money to people, why the hell did they kneel Nippon? That's what the stock market, that's what the bond market's about, isn't it?
You know, Chief, are you talking common sense again?
I'll try not to. Try not to.
Okay. All right, Chief. I'll send you that date again.
All right, but I'm on with you guys on Thursday, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, okay. All right. I really appreciate you doing that, and got a hop, and I'll chat with you on Thursday.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Carl, you want to hear about my funeral where I was thinking of you?
Sure. I always love the morbid stuff.
Well, this isn't... It actually isn't... Well, you know, it's more of a question than a morbidity thing.
Oh, all right.
The funeral's out in Marengo, and it's a guy that... Audrey's more better friends than I am, but we've been friends for a long time. He did some stuff with PTI down in Mexico and everything. Knows a gazillion people down in Mexico, and I can tell you stories about interactions with the central government that probably don't belong on the show. So it's kind of a small town funeral where you actually meet at the cemetery, right?
Yep.
I haven't done that in like forever. So we're out there and I'm like, what, are you sure we're in the right cemetery? Like there's nobody here except for dead people. And she's like, well, it is the only cemetery in town, so it must be the right. You know, wasn't it the Three Stooges? since this is the only place, it must be the place. Wasn't that their line or something?
Something like that, yeah.
So, of course, there's another car pulls in, and then we see there's a grave that's open with the thing on top. And sure enough, after a while, they pull up with the hearse and the body, right? There's no wake before. Well, in the meantime, I'm doing my usual Stocks and Jacks Cub Reporter stuff because everybody's got the little flags on all the veterans' graves. And, like, damn near every grave has got the flag. And I'm walking around, and I'm going, God, Carl should be here. Boy, talk about a research thing. There is people from World War II, from Korea, Vietnam. Yeah. And you know what, Carl? I'm thinking, what would Carl do? Literally. I start looking at the ages.
Yep.
You know what? 55, 60, 58, 62, once in a while, 70.
Yeah.
All these guys died young. There was a couple of guys who were 75, but virtually everybody was maybe late 50s to late 60s. Now, they must have come back in a small town, probably all were smokers, maybe. And I'm looking at this, and then there's a cemetery to the right of the original, next to the original cemetery, where it's got to be older. The people near it got to be older than sin. The headstones are like these little concrete things, like etched in and stuff.
Oh, this is there's one of those on Mackinac Island that is full of people that, you know. I mean, I think the newest headstone is probably, well, I don't know. It's probably not true because there are spots that aren't. But you got some, 1800s.
Well, I'm sitting there thinking, why in Marengo? Because we just went through the town of Huntley. Right. And this is all along Route 20 in northern Illinois. And I sit there, and all of a sudden it dawns on my feeble brain, hey, you know that railroad track we just went over?
Right.
I wonder, that has to be the Chicago to Galena Railroad.
Uh-huh.
Which was the oldest railroad coming out of Chicago. It actually was chartered in 1836.
Oh, wow.
They started work on it in 1848.
Okay.
It was before any of the railroads going east, before the Illinois Central. Might have been, by the time they started it, might have been the same time as the Illinois Central. But it was the first one chartered, and it was because there were all kinds of lead mines in Galena, of all things. So I'm guessing the reason why there's this really old gravesite in Marengo for guys who worked on the railroad.
Yep.
And all these little towns are right along the railroad. In U.S. 20 is right along the railroad.
Yep.
And you notice...
Well, that's because the rights of way all kind of, run the same place, right?
Well, it also is the surveyors of the railroad were pretty damn good. If you go west from Omaha and you're on Interstate 80, just to the right of you is U.S. 30.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, just to the right of U.S. 30 is the original railroad.
Right.
And some of the surveyors... It did the railroad. Now, I-80 was surveyed pretty much by satellite, right? Satellite helped, and you had all kinds of modern equipment. And the railroad was essentially surveyed by people on horseback dodging arrows.
Well, duh.
And they're about 80 yards apart.
Yeah.
Amazing how these old guys did this stuff.
Oh, well, that's because we were serious. We were a serious population back then.
You know, when they, for those of
them, we were serious people, Chief, at the time.
Well, the Moffett Tunnel, if you wanted to go west, there were only five passes that you could get your way through. Those are your Western railroads. Well, actually, maybe four, because the northern ones use the same pass. The first pass went through Donner Pass. That was the one in the Union Pacific.
That thing's infamous for being a serious problem in the winter, especially.
Yeah, well, everybody ate each other. That's a problem.
Yeah.
The Donner family. But then there's the Union Pacific South. I mean, the Southern Pacific South. There's a Santa Fe. That's three. And then you have the Northern Pacific. And I think the Great Northern, when they actually went through the Sierras, might have used the same pass. Anyway, there's only like four spots, because you could never get through in the Rockies. So finally, one day they said, you know, we really need a tunnel here. And a guy named Moffett designed the Moffett Tunnel. And if you take I-80, you know, it's 70. If you take 70 through the Rockies, there's the Eisenhower Tunnel you go through, and just to the right of you is the Moffett Tunnel for the railroad. And these guys, I mean, were taking forever to only start at one end and dig through, right? So they started at both ends and used all this, you know, I don't even know if they had slide rules. They probably did. When they got to the middle, they were only an inch off. Well, how the hell do you do that?
Well, like I said, we used to be a serious group of people.
What exactly has happened? You hear it sort of everywhere. Yesterday, I mean, Audrey said, if Kenny's here, let me know. But
he is. He's
okay.
On.
Well, there's one quick story, and then we'll get Kenny. We'll have you on Friday. Audrey's out doing some stuff with weeds in her house. You know, God knows what. I take her by weed stuff, and she's doing weed stuff. All of a sudden, I hear her BSing with some lady, and the lady comes by, and Nate and, of course, they're chat-chatting, and I just happen to wander out, and the lady evidently is a teacher at pharmacy school somewhere.
Okay.
And she says, she goes, I'm retiring a year early. I can't stand the students anymore.
Yeah.
And she goes, this week somebody shows up in my office. I said, what are you doing here? Well, nice to see you. I want to negotiate my grade. She goes, what do you mean, negotiate? I can't even imagine going to a teacher when I was in college or high school or grammar anywhere and trying to up your grade.
I had a woman who was the mother of a person that worked for me trying to negotiate her daughter not being fired.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, how do you...
And she got thrown out of the office because the person in question was an adult. Legally, I can't even have the conversation. Because that's, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of problems with doing that. 100%. So I threw her out of the office point blank. I'm like, get out of here. I can't even talk to you about this.
Well, Carl, we'll talk on Friday, buddy. Why are we so intent on dumbing down the population, Kenny? What's the story with this?
It's scary. You know what? It's about being entitled. It's about getting whatever they want. And so they think they can negotiate grades. They think they can, you know, let me call mommy and daddy and tell them to come in here and talk to my boss and get me a better job, a better seat, a better desk, a better... Are you kidding me? This stuff makes me absolutely crazy.
Yeah,
it makes me nuts.
Yeah, I don't... I wonder where... You know, boy, I don't have any kids, so it's not like
I have no idea how what these people think and why they even think it's appropriate negotiating a grade. What does that mean, actually, negotiating their grade? How about you just do your work, you do the best you can, and your grade is what it is? To your point, never in a million years would I have gone back to negotiate a grade.
No.
You'd back maybe and talk about tests you took or what could I do better, blah, blah, blah. But negotiating a grade? What is that?
Well, plus she said the kid had not showed up in class, and she said, "Well, if he showed up in class, plus he got a B. It wasn't like he got an F; he got a B."
Right, right.
He wanted an A. She goes, "We haven't been in class, and by the way, he was a B paper."
He stamped his C because he wants an A. You know what? Honestly, it makes me crazy just to sit here and think about it.
I think some of it though, Kenny. It's almost like we talked with Carl about if you're not cheating, you're not trying in this day's world. I think, you know, it's also to the point where if you don't get other people somehow or another, the grade inflation has been dramatic. I mean, everybody gets A's. Everybody gets...
You know, 100%.
I mean, I know what I... What the hell did I get on my ACT?
It's like everybody gets a trophy. It's those generations where everybody got a trophy. Everybody did a great job. You know, the fact is, if you didn't do a good job, you didn't do a good job, period, the end. And you either stuck with it, or you quit. I mean, there's only two ways to do this, right? You either improve, you stick with it and improve, or you don't. And it's okay if you decide to quit. You quit, you don't like doing it, that's fine, then don't do it. But everybody gets a trophy, I think, is a huge mistake. And I think it's been a huge mistake because it gives this whole generation of kids the idea that, you know, that no matter what they do, they're going to get a trophy. It's baloney.
So, you know, in our Pee Wee League, yeah, everybody got a trophy about an inch and a half high for participating. But right, if you won, you got a big other trophy in addition to it. So you got both.
Correct. I mean, correct.
I don't think anything wrong with that, but I mean,
well, I hear you, but I hear you. You know, a participation trophy is certainly different than, you know, a winning trophy. You,
oh, without a doubt, yeah.
Whatever it was, you know. But I just have. I guess I get it, but I think it. I think when you go along, these kids grow up thinking, you know, they're entitled. I think it's wrong.
Well, you end up being, and this is what, you know, we'll talk about the market. Boy, right now, if you're not wired into this White House, you're not doing so hot, are you?
You know, and I put that in my note this morning. I want to know who got the call on Thursday night to get short the market on Friday, you know, for Friday morning, and then who got the call on Friday night to get long the market Friday night going into Monday, Tuesday morning.
Yeah,
it's absolutely crazy the way you look at it. First of all, everybody should know by now that Trump style is Trump style. He's arrogant. He's brash. You know, he comes out and if he stamps his feet, if he doesn't get his way in terms of timing and all that stuff. Look, there's 27 countries in the EU. You're not negotiating with one country. You have to negotiate 27, because every country's got their own agenda on the table. So you can't just negotiate with the EU. You have to negotiate with 27 countries. So for him to stand up and stamp his feet, to me, just shows a level of arrogance that I can't, you know, that I want to support the, you know, the renegotiation of trade agreements. I want to support that because I think it's okay to renegotiate trade agreements. But I think you also have to be realistic about how you renegotiate them. And then you see headlines like that on Friday saying, that's it, it's over, not talking anymore, creates all this havoc. And then on, you know, Monday, Sunday night, or Monday afternoon, suddenly you see, oh, it's all good, we put off the tariffs until July. Scott Bessent says it the best. You know, he tries to come out and mute or try to soften around the edges. But ultimately, the market's going to react to whatever Trump says, as much as Scott Bessent tries to calm it down. You know, the algos will react to every word that he says. So I think he's got to start keeping his mouth shut, quite
what
honestly.
Do you, I mean, what would you think, Kenny, 50 years from now, when you and I are both hanging around in heaven having a cocktail, if we find out they did it on purpose, just to trade?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know what the truth is? You can't just say it about Trump, let's be honest. You have to say it about everyone, whether it's the Fed making commentary, whether it was any administration making a statement that causes the market to move as violently as it does. Because I think they're all guilty. They're all guilty of it. So I think that goes to the point that anyone in the administration needs to have a blind trust. They need to turn no more personal trading accounts, nothing. As long as you're employed in the administration or you're in the government, you need to have a blind trust and you have no personal trading accounts. That's what I think should happen across the board. It's bullshit, for as far as I'm concerned. And you too, I would imagine, the same thing. Because it brings up this exact conversation. Who knew? Who's cheating? Who's making money? It brings up that same conversation, and rightly so. Because that's what everyone said on Friday morning. Okay, we're going to the long weekend. They're skeleton crews, and he comes out with this market-moving headline creating all this volatility. Who knew? Who got short on Thursday night going into Friday morning? Who knew? I think you can easily follow the path.
Well, you could if you wanted to.
You could if you wanted to. Exactly right. Exactly right. You know, and you and I would say they should, because, you know, they're coming after you and me. If we did something wrong, they're coming right after us.
Plus, you know, I have somebody I just mentioned earlier, we're on finishing our third audit of the year. I don't know what kind of brokerage firm would take that order. Now, electronically, I know you can sort of do a lot of stuff, but even if, you know, we have, for those that don't know, shameless plug, I guess, we have two clearing firms that we clear through. One is RBC, Royal Bank of Canada, and one is Interactive Brokers. So one is a, you know, traditional kind of place where we put the orders in and blah, 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 and you do them through us. And it has some serious advantages for some types of trading. But if you're going to do your stuff online, I mean, you want to do it at IB. They've probably the best online system. I think they do. I mean, I'm not genius on all of them, but I think it's probably the most professional online system. Let's put it that way, in terms of spreads and those kinds of things.
Yep.
Now, if all of a sudden, you know, and we watch what people do, that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
If all of a sudden we had a guy that signed up 2 months ago, and of course you do due diligence on all these people. I mean, you check them out in the, what's the European Police Department? I'm drawing a blank. Interpol. We got to check them through Interpol. We check them everything. All of a sudden, Friday morning when I was talking to whoever was on the show, Kevin, if we had a trade to sell 35 futures miraculously 10 minutes before the announcement came out, the same guy today or last night traded, you know, we'd say who the hell is this guy? We don't want him.
Right.
I mean, we God bless. What do you think our next audit would look like? But all these other places, do they not get audited? I mean, how does somebody not sit there and go, who is this guy? What's he doing here?
I don't know, but I don't know how that. Because to your point, that's right. Because you would, right? It would be flagged, and we'd get a phone call the very next day, which is what always kept us in line. But I don't understand how, take them off, all of them, whether it's a congressman or woman, whether it's a senator, they're all trading. Look at their accounts. You can see these guys go in there. They get a job that pays them $175,000 a year, yet they got $40 million net worths or $100 million net worths. How does that happen?
Well, I think there's to be honest, I don't want to go down this road, Kenny, because it's not me.
Right.
I'm kind of a black and white kind of guy when it comes to morality, but I would say that you and I, in the last month, if we had anticipation of what this guy was going to say, and don't think people don't, I'm going to say you and I could have made twice as much money as Pelosi and Hunter Biden made in their whole life.
Okay. I might agree with you there, but that's still not the point. You and I don't do it. That's the point.
Yeah,
right?
We don't. But it's like some of my friends, the NIL now, they'll say, guys always got money. And I go, wait a minute. Guys used to get, $50 for a bus ticket to go to your uncle's funeral. It's not the same as giving them $3 million. Somehow we've kind of shifted gears here a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, this is crazy. Hey, I got a phrase for you.
What?
I was mentioning earlier, I was at this funeral, right? And so go back to the house, and you came in the end of the story. But this lady's making all these things. They're egg rolls, but they're absolutely delicious. They're bigger than regular egg rolls, and one is a typical Chinese or Japanese, and the other one is actually Irish, with Reuben stuff in her corned beef. And somebody was talking about this lady, and she made like 500 of them over the last couple of days for a couple of parties in Marengo. And he goes, how the hell does she do that? Here, how's this for a phrase for you? She's a functional insomniac. Have you heard that term?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have?
A functional insomniac is like a functional drunk, right? They can function whether they have sleep or not.
Well, but most people, as you get old, sometimes you have trouble, you wake up and you have trouble getting back to sleep. I don't think anybody's alone in that. Most people just sit there and try and go back to sleep all pissed off. She gets up and works.
Right.
So it's two in the morning, she's cooking.
I got to tell you, I do the same thing. I get up this morning at 2 o'clock because I woke up, I'm lying in bed. I couldn't fall back to sleep, so I got up and I started to do some work, just getting ready for the day. I just couldn't go back to sleep.
So that's what you are. You're a functional insomnia.
Functional insomnia.
I heard that line. I go, wait a minute, I never heard that one before. That's pretty good.
The problem is, though, I'll go home tonight. I'll be in bed by 6:30, and I'll wake up at midnight, and again, I won't be able to sleep. So I got to try to keep myself awake till 9:30 or 10 o'clock, and then go to sleep and sleep through the night.
Well, I'm trying to do the same thing. But if you're watching a sporting event by yourself, I guarantee you some long commercial in the fourth quarter, you're done.
Yeah, I hear you.
I was trying to make it through the basketball game last night. I didn't quite make it.
Yeah, I got you.
And it was a pretty good game. So what? Now that we're essentially back where we were Friday morning.
Right, exactly.
Now what? Well, now what?
All the people that ran out the door on Friday are running back in the door this morning, which really is comical to me because I look at we have this conversation with the clients. I said, listen, just sit tight. Don't make an emotional decision. And look where they are. That's right. They're panicking about what's happening on Friday, and this morning they're all going, oh God, thank God I didn't sell my stuff. Yeah, I hear you. This is why I keep telling you, don't make emotional decisions. We've seen this playbook before, right?
Well, I do have to ask you, but I have clients. We both have clients, and And so far, well, certainly the 15-year plan has been every time you see something bad, you either don't sell or you probably want to buy more or double up or repair strategy or something. What do you make? I'm sensing there's this kind of degradation going on around us, though, Kenny, and I don't know how severe it is. I mean, we've got 30-year rates over 5. It looks like they're sort of in danger of going higher.
30-year rates down below 5. I think they're down 7 bips this morning at like 4.96.
Okay, I figured that because the 10 is down a lot.
Yeah. 5 is certainly 5% is a point that gets everyone a little bit nervous, and rightly so, because at some point, you know, then the 10-year is going to start heading. If the 5 goes much beyond 5%, the 10-year is going right to 4.75 or 4.8%, which is going to then pose more of a challenge for stocks, and rightly so. You know, some people just want out. They want to know if they get this, they're safe, secure, they're no risk, and they're out. So I think you have to keep your eyes on that. You have to see why rates are in fact inching up. Are they inching up because they're afraid the economy is going to go off the edge, or are they inching up because the economy remains robust? Right now, I'm
not so sure. I think the economy is slipping, sliding everywhere.
Well, okay, so let's see, because you know there's going to be more hard data, a lot of hard data and soft data this week, right? So let's see where it goes. The PCE on Friday is going to be, you know, the inflation number. You're going to get the first revision.
Kenny, what is your? Not going into too much detail. I think the PCE, you could pull that number out of my behind. There's no detail. You and I can't find any. Why would anybody believe that number?
They believe it because they're programmed to believe it, because that's what the Fed looks at that number as their guiding light, right? As their north star.
But they're the ones that make it up, isn't it? Who gets
that? Well, no, the PCE doesn't come from the Fed. It comes from the BLS, doesn't it?
No, the CPI, CPI comes from the BLS.
The PCE comes from the Fed.
It's not the Fed or the BLS. It's somebody else.
Oh, all right. I'll look it up. But one way or the other, they're just programmed to believe, here are the things we believe, here are the things we look at, here are the things that the market's going to pay attention to, and so you pay attention to it. Whether you can argue whether or not you think it's right, wrong, or indifferent, but the market has gotten accustomed, we've been forced to say, here are the data points that we look at. Now, whether or not you believe it is going to dictate how you trade or how you invest, right? Some people pay zero attention. I don't think the PC is going to do anything this week that's going to change my opinion of how I'm invested or how we're investing for clients. I don't think you're going to get a surprise to the upside, but nor do I think you're going to get a surprise to the downside.
Well,
so therefore, I'm not basing any conversations with clients on what happens on Friday's PC.
No, not well, that. Me neither. I mean,
yeah, that's not the conversation.
I mean, I think you and I could probably make a, you know, I say this too much probably, but you could take the, how many years you want to go? 2000, 2007, and yep. look at the CPI and look at 5 things that you think are significant, and they're not even close. I mean, they're not even close.
Right.
So I mean, the question is, when is the market going to stop? I'll use the term believing it, right now we've got the long term rates are going up, and I'm looking this week to see what the Fed balance sheet is. All of a sudden, the last 2 or 3 weeks since they've been moving up, you see the Fed balance sheet all of a sudden upticking.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if, if it's going to keep. I mean, it really is people's anticipation going forward. And some guy was on this week talking about his new car sales this month are up more, the prices are up more than they have been since the beginning of COVID.
Now, it's funny, you know, because, well, I guess I haven't gone in and looked, because I'm seeing car ads all over TV with big discounts, $10,000 discounts on trucks, $5,000 discounts on cars. But you're right. What's the base price must be significantly higher. I haven't looked to buy a new car, so I haven't been car shopping, so I don't know that. But it's interesting to see they're back to 0% financing again. They're back to, here's $5,000 off. But yes, if the price of the car is up 50%, $5,000 off is no big, it's not really a big deal.
Well, the whole idea of trying to figure out what the profit is on a car or what the price is, I don't know how you even do it. Between the list price being so high compared to what you normally pay, there's room in there to do everything, right?
There's room in there to do everything, right.
I mean, did the CPI ever pick up that during COVID people were paying 10% over list?
I don't think it did. I don't think it did.
But for a while it was what? 10% over?
10% over, yeah.
I mean, nobody ever pays that normally. I mean, unless you have some really hot car. By the way, do you have your order in for this new Cadillac?
No, I don't.
I would have thought your name would have been on that list.
No, I haven't. Not yet. I'm very comfortable. I got a 2020 and a 2019. They're in great shape down here in Florida. I don't put a lot of miles on them. I'm good with them. My cars are fine. I take good care of them. There's no reason for me to jump and, you know, spend crazy money for a new car right now.
What do you mean? $380,000 for a guy like you is chump change.
Yeah, I'm not that person, though, that, you know, has to go show up with a new shiny car every couple of years. I'm just not.
Have you heard about what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about the EV Cadillac?
No. They're coming out with a new handmade Cadillac. They're only making the 25 or 50. It might be 50.
Oh, no way.
And they're going to be $380,000.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Handmade toward your specs, like a Duesenberg was.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, you pull into the saloon, you're the only guy in a lot with that thing.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're the only guy in a lot.
Since we're only selling like one in the state of Florida.
Go back and look it up. I haven't even seen that. So let me go back and look it up. I'd be curious. Not that I'm buying one. But,
I'd write the check for the $20,000 down right now, if I were you. Would you imagine what it would have been like driving in some place back in the 30s when during the Depression you wheel in a Duesenberg? Good Lord.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Those things cost, I think they cost like $11,000 back then. What was that, about 8 years' pay?
8 years? Probably 15 years' pay.
That's pretty scary. So now that we're back here, essentially, well, we're a little higher than we were Friday morning because we came back some on Friday. NASDAQ didn't come back as much. Now what? I mean, we have.
So here's what you do. I think it's going to be tough to get through what I think the high is 59. The high that was in, I'm just looking right now. The high back on May 19th, which was 59.68. I think it's going to be tough. The market's probably going to test closer to, 58.70 today, up about 70 or so points if it stays hot. But I think it's going to struggle around that high that it reached on the 19th, 59.68. Friday took us right down to the trend line. We found support there. We're going to bounce today. So I think we're between the trend line, which is 57.60 and 59.60. I think that's the trading range we're in right now. Just because it continues to be this uncertainty and there's no real clarity on trade, still with China and now with the EU. While they put a pause on it, July 9th is going to be here before you know it, and if there's nothing done, we're going to go through this whole action all over again.
What do you make of this story about everybody who's wealthy and is leaning toward gold? We're not today. Gold's down a bunch. Storing their gold in Singapore? If I had a big chunk of gold, why would I put it there?
I think a lot of people were nervous, right? They're nervous about what's going to happen to the U.S. dollar. They're not in the Bitcoin trade. They want to have something that they can hold. You can't really hold Bitcoin. You can hold gold, right? People are physically buying gold, physically, right? And they're holding it, whether they put it in their safe deposit box, they bury it in their backyard, whatever they do with it. They want to hold gold when they get really nervous. And I've seen, we've seen that now with what's happened. Besides the central bank buying all over the world, you've seen a lot of money, a lot of people who are nervous, they want to physically own gold. I get it. I guess I get it.
So you and I are going to, if we get in trouble, we're going to fly over to Singapore and we're going to grab our gold and we're going to hop on a plane and come back without any. Why would I trust those people?
No, well, why are you keeping your gold in Singapore?
I don't know if you read the big article on the CNBC last night that's where everybody's storing everyone. All the rich people, the multinational creatures, not like us, that's their point of safety right now.
Oh well, I didn't read the story. I'll have to read the story and see. But
Kenny, there's a difference between you and I, who actually give a crap about the U.S. and the multinational guys that governments are just a bunch of pawns to be manipulated, because they're the real world power, right?
And all those people that are hiding their gold in Singapore, right? They're the people that can go and do whatever they want, whenever they want.
We need to nip that group down just a hair, I think, for the rest of us to be healthy. What do you think?
Say it again?
I think we need to find a way to maybe blunt that group a little bit for the rest of us to be happy. Otherwise, there's just stealing going on everywhere, I think.
Yeah, well, I hear you, but how are you going to blunt that group? I mean, that's the problem.
Did you ever read The Sovereign State of ITT way back?
No.
I keep threatening this. I'm going to have to buy that. And I mean, next time you're on, there's one page in there Or the guy, you probably heard of this name, the guy who ran the place was a guy named Harold Janine. Remember that name?
I do not.
He was the chairman. ITT was the first international conglomerate. You know, they put in the telegraph lines across the ocean and all that crap. And there was a, he was one of these guys, and one of the pages in there was his thought process regarding how difficult it is for a real genius like him and all his, you know, making the world better through technology. Boy, when have we heard that before?
Yeah.
And how he had to deal with all these governments and how they were just interfering bunch of chumps in the way and how guys like him should really be in charge. If I read that thing, you'd sit there and go, did Bezos write that? These other guys, it's the exact same mentality, and it had to be 80 years ago.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, these governments are just a bunch of chumps, and by the way, I just manipulate between them, and off we go, and if the world was a smarter place, they just put me in charge. That sound familiar?
Yeah.
It sounds real familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, sounds very familiar.
People don't change, do they?
I don't want to leave you hanging, but I got to jump.
All right, buddy, you take care. We'll talk next week, and have a nice weekend.
You too, bye-bye.
Do we have the professor?
Yes.
Hey, Tom.
How are you, bud?
I've been all right.
God, we're all over the place this morning. I was talking about...
Oh, yeah, you are.
Old railroads and old graveyards and...
Yeah.
And how
that's why people tune in.
Well, you know, I just... I had heard that you know, I'm kind of a railroad buff, or at least used to be. As soon as I went over this track, I go, this has got to be the Chicago to Galena Railroad. And I'll bet all the people in that cemetery over there were working on the damn railroad.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how long it took to build, but it was 1936. It got the go-ahead, and it didn't start till 48. And in those days, didn't they give them, 2-3 miles each side of the track so they could sell to make money for the railroad? Wasn't that the deal?
Well, I do know that there was a traveling town on the railroad with all kinds of services provided, and I'll put services in quotes.
Well, that was the difference between the Irish and the Asians who built the Transcontinental Railroad. The Irish were going west.
Yeah.
And the Asians were coming east because there weren't enough, you know, essentially white people in California.
And neither one wanted to stop because they had this S-shaped union in Utah.
Right. So they actually made tracks like parallel to each other for a while until finally they stopped.
Yeah. Government financing, I guess, is like a black hole, right? It wants to put everything in the excretion disc.
Well, when they left Omaha, which was the start on this end, and the guy who was running the Pacific was a guy named Colonel Dodge. So when you go in every town, there's a Dodge Street, you know, named after this guy. And he starts the thing out, and he goes to Washington for a couple of months, and he comes back, and they're getting kind of paid by the mile, right? But also they got all kinds of land on each side of it. Like 20% of the entire square footage or mileage of the country was given to the five Western railroads to build the railroads. But then again, most of the land wasn't worth anything. I mean, Burlington Industries was actually the spinoff of all the mineral rights that was given to the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy. And they separated the countries between the mineral rights and the trackage and the railroad, essentially. But anyway, they start out from Omaha, and immediately, instead of having a straight line to the next wherever they were going, they got this big curve. And it was called the Big Oxbow. And when Colonel Dodge comes back from Washington, he's like, what the bleep is that? What are you guys doing? Well, we thought we could add a few more miles. He goes, what are you... Stop that. And from then on, it was straight, but they put, like, you know, on a 30-mile stretch, they made it, like, 35 miles or something, because they curved it.
Well, you got to get your overtime in, right?
Oh, absolutely. But what you're talking about is the guys going west.
Yeah.
Were mostly all Irish. And they drank heavily. Of course, I mean, why wouldn't you on that job?
Yeah.
And when the town moved...
Well, there's nothing else. It's like being on a Navy ship in the middle of the Middle East, right? I mean, Persian Gulf. What else can you do? You're going to go drink beer on the pier, right?
Well, and those guys, they went... every time they'd move, you know, 5 miles further down, they actually put the town on flat cars. And there were like five saloons, three whorehouses, yep. and maybe a general store. Now, coming the other way, the Asians didn't drink. They demanded vegetables, which you could do from... So from the westernmost spot, they would actually bring fresh vegetables for the workers. And then on Sunday, they had their day off, and they smoked opium. Talk about it. There was a difference. They just on Sunday, they smoked opium. That was their day off.
Hey, to each their own, right?
But anyway, I was anxious to have you on today because as part of this funeral thing where we're essentially waiting for the body to show up, I was looking around at the gravestones, and virtually everybody had a flag in there as being a veteran.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at these guys, Alan, and I'm, you know, of course, now I start doing the Stocks and Jocks math. God, this guy was like World War II guy. He made it to 55. This guy's 58. This guy's 60. Then you get the Korean guys. This guy was 62, 64. Maybe one guy out of 10 or 15 made it to 70. All these guys in their 50s, late 50s, not 51 or 52 necessarily, but late 50s, mid 60s. Is that because... Not just what happened to them, but everybody was encouraged to smoke. Everybody probably drank too much, but drinking, I don't think is as bad for you necessarily as a smoker.
Well, you know, if you're in a foxhole in Europe and it's raining, I mean, what else are you gonna do?
Yeah.
You're not gonna stick your head over that. You're not gonna stick your head up and get it shot off. You're probably gonna smoke. I mean, in the Navy ship that I was on, I wanted to be a smoker because every hour. The smoker's got 5-minute smoke break. So what I decided to do is I decided to pull a Rachel. I went out on the smoke deck to get my 5-minute smoke break, and I stood there and I didn't smoke, but I sucked all that cigarette smoke up. But what are you gonna do? You're probably gonna smoke a lot, right? And you might even make your own alcohol with, you know, fruit juicers or something too, right? Because you got time to kill. You know, on a Navy ship, when we're doing damage control drills, we're sitting in a air mask for an hour and a half on the decks. I mean, can you imagine what it was like?
Oh.
You know, somewhere in Europe, cold, rain. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you're probably going to do that kind of thing, right?
Well, I'm just
and
saying.
And you got to remember, too, back in the 1950s and 60s, life expectancy wasn't all that much. So... People dying at 55 and, you know, 60, 55, probably pretty normal for the decade, right?
Well, these guys are...
You add in on the fact that they were probably, you know, smoking a lot. My parents, man, they smoked so much, it was unbelievable. I think it was a generational thing.
Yeah, so did mine.
Walk into the house, I was the only member of my family, my three brothers, my mom and my dad, and my stepdad, who did not smoke. And when I walked into the house, there was a smoke cloud in there that was... The only clean air was... bottom 3 feet of the floor. That was it, you know. And I basically crawl in on my belly because it's so bad.
Yeah, they used to have a poker game with six people playing, all six smoking.
Oh, man, yeah. I couldn't do it. Maybe that's why I can't breathe to this day. I don't know, man. It was pretty bad.
Well, what I was thinking of is in the last few weeks I was talking to Audrey's friend, Di, who's doing the stuff at the Fisher House. And she was saying that the amount of people coming to the veterans' home here out in Hines and evidently, and I've mentioned this before, depending on what you have essentially wrong with you, some places specialize in different stuff. Like if you have a burn issue, there's one I think in San Antonio, that's the burn place.
Yes.
Yeah. And I said, what is Hines about? She goes, we're really good on the fake limbs, whatever you want to call them, prosthetics, and they do a lot of cancer. And I go, really? She goes, yeah. I mean, we have a lot of the people that stay at Fisher House are people coming from all these other states around here, Southern Illinois. They come up here for a chemo thing for a week, and the family stays in Fisher House. And then they go home, and they're back 6 weeks later if they're still alive. And so the amount of cancer from people in Vietnam is off the chart.
Yeah.
And I know my cousin was in Vietnam and got Agent Orange and everything else, and he died of cancer at an early age. He was a smoker. In Vietnam, I think they used to give you all the stuff for free, right? The smokes or World War II.
Oh, yeah, probably, did. Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it.
And then Lou was on 2 weeks ago talking about how a lot of his buddies from the Air Force Academy became fighter pilots and logged, you know, thousands of hours way up in the air with those canopies the amount of cancer among those guys is endemic too.
Yeah.
I mean, you start acting, you know, today, yesterday being Memorial Day, the actual price, the people who died in service, I mean, there's obviously two holidays. There's Memorial Day for people who died, okay, and then there's Veterans Day, which is a celebration for anybody who served. I wonder if there isn't a more blended thing there going on. I'm saying if you died 10 years later because of Agent Orange and cancer, that's pretty close to dying in war, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And I don't know that anybody ever kind of well, I mean, makes if that you crossover. Think about it,
if you were some young kid from Iowa or Idaho and you are drafted in the war and the horrors that you're seeing and the idle time that you have, you know, you're smoking, you're drinking, maybe you handle that PTSD with, you know, alcohol and cigarettes, and that's what kills you. I mean, had that war not taken place, had you not been drafted and been exposed to what you saw, maybe you're not like that, right? So maybe even those deaths are, those are 20-year suicides. You know, my mom drank heavily, and I used to think that she wanted to be independent, you know, get out of the house when you turn 18 kind of thing. But what it was is her traumas in her childhood were so incredible that she wanted us out of the house so she could just drink. And then she drank herself into a 20-year suicide. And I think a lot of service members are in that position too. One thing I like doing on Memorial Day is I love watching Sand Pebbles with Steve McQueen and oh, yeah. Candace. Oh, that to me, that's like one of the best movies ever made, bar none. And
tell everybody real
Holman,
quickly what
Holman's
it's about.
Character is so much like my character, Holman.
Tell everybody real quick what it's about.
Oh, it's about a guy from Utah who got in trouble in high school, not his own. I mean, he got in a fight, but his principal kind of lied to him, so he punched his principal in the eye with glasses, and it cut him. So the judge says, reform school, Navy, or Army. So he joined the Navy. He didn't join the Navy voluntarily. He joined the Navy because it was the least of the three options, the least bad option of three. So he's in the Navy, and he has this talent for fixing things. So he's an engineman. And he says in the movie, hey, as long as you're good at your job, they can't tear you down. He tells that to Candace Bergen. And this is about the China sailors, the American sailors that were stationed on warships that the United States inherited by winning the Spanish-American War. The Spanish-American War. And in the movie, there's two scenes that really cut through to me. It's when the guy, his coolie that he trains, that he ends up loving, this Chinese guy, he trains him to run the engine. And the head of the coolies, Chinese people on the ship, sends this kid into the violence of the city. And this mob shows up, and they want to institute a war. They want to start a war. And they're torturing this kid. And you could just see the pain on Steve McQueen's face. And that girl, Candace Bergen's there because they're escorting her back to their missionary home, because she's a missionary, a teacher. And Holman has to kill this guy that he came to love, this friend of his. He has to kill him to avoid the torture. And the pain on his face just wrecks me every time I watch it. And then later in the movie, at the end, he's in love with Candace Bergen, of course.
Who wouldn't be?
Yeah, and she was a beautiful girl.
Oh, God.
Oh, man, she was beautiful. But in the end of the movie, the movie ends with him telling the captain to shove off, because he's going to force, the captain's going to force the missionaries to leave their home in China, who have renounced their citizenship to the United States. He's going to force them to evacuate, and they don't want to leave. And Steve McQueen tells the captain to shove off, you know, mutiny, right? He's going to stay with her in this utopia, which doesn't exist, to run their generator, right? That's what he decided he's going to do. Well, he ends up dying. So it's just, I think
it's a dark movie.
It's a perfect movie. It's such a good movie. I mean, if you haven't seen it, watch it. You'll love it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you get the more you learn, and, you know, and I'm way past the World War II people. All my uncles and all those people were there, all dead. I'm still learning more and more about you know, what those guys all went through and what it must
They're not been. Homogeneous. There's no. so much heterogeneity in those people, in those and the people that died, the people who survived, right? They're so different. They're individuals. They're not bricks, you know.
But to a man, they didn't really want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, imagine the kind of person who, the people that survive all that, right? I mean, when you survive something like that, you kind of think you're lucky, but as Metallica says, your luck runs out eventually, right?
Well, yeah.
So imagine the people who survive that. Who, you know, like the Tom Hanks character in the movie about Saving Private Ryan. I mean, by chance, the guy survives. He's a teacher, right? Just a high school teacher. But yet he survives.
Well, I used to stand next to a dude in a... Well, stand next. We sort of shared a spot of all things in the OEX pit. It was big enough for two people, but it was comfortable for one. This guy, we're good friends to this day. Ronnie Kuchera is his name, and... Well, my mom dies, and he comes to the wake. So, like, the next day, it was 2 days later, I had to go to his dad's funeral, you know, talk about her wake. So I go up there, and I'm looking, you know, you look at the pictures and all that stuff, and I see all these medals from his dad, and I go, turns out his dad was like a destroyer captain or something.
Wow.
In the South Pacific.
Wow.
Like, Ronnie, you never told me your dad was like a destroyer captain. He goes, well, how could I tell you? I don't think he ever told us.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys, they just wanted to get home and get away from that. If you asked them, yeah. After a while, they would give you some kind of clue as to what. But I learned a lot from Audrey's dad, who was he was in the Pacific, and he was a guy that did. There were times where he had the gun and had a fight, but basically his skill set was putting near. Runways back together after they got bombed, because he had worked on the Trans-Canada Highway.
Yeah. That's the key thing about Memorial Day, is remembering that these people weren't all identical.
No.
They're so different, you know, from different parts of the country, different economic status, just individuals. And that's what we got to keep in mind, is they're individuals. Some of them wanted to be there, some didn't want to be there, some felt compelled to be there. Some... You know, we're going to take the hill, whether the captain said take the hill or not, right? But
yep.
Others are like, you know, maybe I don't want to take the hill. I mean, there's such individuality in these people, and that's what I love about Sand Pebbles, is you get the lifer salt dogs. They're on the ship, the Sand Pebbles, nicknamed Sand Pebbles. And you got this one guy who is there not by choice, but he's good at fixing the engine and running the engine, and he does the work. He doesn't sit around letting the coolies take care of him. He wants to run the engine. He's there to be in control of the engine, to fix it, to take care of it, and ultimately teach this young Chinese guy to run the engine. But the lessons where he's teaching this kid to run the engine about live steam and dead steam, man, it's so good.
Well, you learn something. I know my stepfather, who had had some personality issues, but as a manager... He was, I think, really spot on. He said one thing about the Army is you learn you have to cooperate and you have to coexist with people you don't even like for a common cause.
I mean, you have to coexist and you have to cooperate with people who don't want to be there, and you got to cooperate with people who are gung-ho and want to be there. I mean, it's a difficult job.
He ended up being a controller and a vice president of finance for a big firm and so forth. But if you went through his accounting department when it was still here in Chicago, and I was high school or something, I'd pick him up sometimes, and you'd walk through there, and way before, this is going to sound awful, way before its time, if you walk through there, you'd find somebody who was black, somebody who was Asian, somebody who was something else. He did not give a crap at all what you looked like, where you came from. And if you're going to show up,
give him eight hours,
and he was happy as a clam. You're supposed to get along. Oh, by the way, we have a job to do. Let's do it, and let's go home and whatever.
Well, that's one thing. That's one good thing about the military, is when you go to boot camp, you walk in, you all look different. Some's got afros, some's got mullets, some's got short hair, some's got long hair. And you come walking out of RIF, right, where you get all your recruit training command clothes, your haircut, and your BCG glasses, which is short for birth control glasses. You're guaranteed not to get lucky wearing these glasses. That's how ugly you look in these. You got guys coming out of RIF with these really ugly looking clothes that nobody would wear in their right mind, with haircuts they would never wear because it's, you know, basically shave your head, and these dorky glasses. And no matter where you come from in the United States, huh?
What are glasses for?
Well, the people who can't see. So you got people who can see and the people who can't see. And the people who can't see get these really nerdy glasses.
Well, so you, like the first time in your life you had an eye test, and half the guys need glasses, and they give them these crummy glasses. All right, I get it.
You come walking out of Riff, black, white, Hispanic, whatever, and y'all look the same. I mean, that's why they call it uniform, right? Y'all look the same. And you form these bonds, these band of brothers bonds, right? Blood brother bonds, especially on a ship. You just form these bonds. And my friends from the Navy are probably closer to me than my brothers. And my brothers and I are really close. But when you are in these unreal situations across the globe, you form these bonds that just survive, you know, just...
Were you guys ever in any kind of a situation where there might have been some shooting? I mean, there have been all kinds of scrapes over the last 40 years.
On our ship, we were in the Persian Gulf just after the first Gulf War, when we took out... When we liberated Kuwait, from Saddam, we were in the Persian Gulf for five months, and our helicopter was flying from our helicopter deck, two different merchant ships, inspecting for, you know, ensuring that the sanctions were being complied with. So they were under attack. I never felt like I was under attack, you know, because in the Navy you're kind of removed from the situation, right? You got Coca-Colas in the galley, you got pancakes, you know, so you're kind of removed from it. We're just stoking the nuclear fire to push the ship.
But like the battleships and stuff, they were firing.
Well, we weren't really firing. No, we just had we were inspecting cargo. That's all we were doing.
But the big, like, was it the New Jersey? One of those things was activated, and they were shelling, right?
Really? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we were in a battle group, and we had submarines that are around us, so I felt pretty safe. I didn't feel like we were going
to
get hit.
Did you ever go to general quarters other than just for drill?
No, just every other day we had a general quarters drill, and then every other day when we weren't doing general quarters drills, we were doing engineering drills.
How long were you out there before port?
I think the most we were out there without a port was like 40 days.
That seems like a lot.
And the mechanics that stood watch in the mechanic division in the engine room down below, we were all pretty pasty white when we hit the beaches. And I tan easy, but my friends just got these 1-inch boils the beach of Africa. And, you know, they just got these big boils on their back. Me, I got a little bit of a burn, and it turned into tan. So I was okay.
Well, what do you say we go to break, and we'll come back and talk about the market here. And this is these announcements causing the market to go back and forth all over the place in these individual stocks. I mean, I'd like your opinion. You can form it on a break. Have the seven big stocks been given so much by this administration, even as crazy high as they are, we got to get on them or what? S&P futures up 80, NASDAQ futures up 320. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Lone one by Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 81, just kind of right where they were when we came in. NASDAQ Futures up 321. This is a mirror image of Friday morning when we were down 80 because of the 50% tariff, and now the 50% tariff's off and we're up 80. So we're actually higher, though, because we came back a little bit during the day on Friday. Dow Futures up 536. Virtually every big stock is up. Banks are up, too. JP Morgan's up $4. Not sure what that's all about. But you've got NVIDIA up 333. Now, remember, those guys have 25 billion shares outstanding, so that's, you know, almost $100 billion worth of market cap just today over in Asia. We've got the Nikkei up 192.5%, Hang Seng up 99.4%, Shanghai down 6.2%. Over in Europe, DAX up 177.7%. Germany's DAX at record high as U.S.-EU trade tensions ease. Euro falls, so the dollar's a little stronger. FTSE up 63.7%, CAC around up 11.2%. They're not really participating for some reason. Bonds down 4 basis points, 4.46, but back under 4.5 on the 10-year. The 30-year is down 56 basis points, but it's they're under 5%, 4.98. It was pretty far over 5 on Friday. Now it's come back the other way. Oil down 39 cents, 61.14. Brent down 34 cents, 64.40. Natural gas down a penny, 3.32. Gold, whack, 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 down 69 bucks. 32.96. Silver down 48 cents, 33.12. Maybe those two might be a buy down here. We'll see. Maybe. Foreign exchange, the dollar is firm. We got the pound, 113. The pound is 135.5. It was a little higher than that. Euro 113.6. It was down, was up almost to 14, so it's, you know, it's down some, as we just said. Crypto up 617, 109.693. Again, the fake stocks keep going up. Ricky, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's Tuesday, the 27th of May here in beautiful Chicago, 7:30 a.m. here. 56 degrees right now with a high of 62. Cloudy, becoming breezy this afternoon with a brief shower or two. Tomorrow will be breezy as well and overcast with a brief shower as well. Low of 54 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 78 degrees right now with a high of 101. Very warm with highs with times of clouds and sun. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 72 degrees. Iman Kennedy from Monroe is 26 minutes. Iman Innes from Lane Cook, we're looking at 43 minutes. 39 minutes, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, inbound Ryan Express, 95th, 23 minutes, and inbound Stevenson from 24 to the Den Ryan, 34 minutes. Talk about sports real quick. NHL Finals, Game 4 yesterday, the Hurricanes showing signs of life with a victory over the Panthers after a 3-loss streak. Score was 3-0, and series is 3-1 in favor of Florida. Today we got Stars at Oilers, 7 p.m., and Edmonton leading the series 2-1. NBA Finals Game 4 yesterday, the Thunder barely beat Timberwolves 128-126, leading the series 3-1. And today we got Knicks at Pacers, 7 p.m. Indiana coming with the series lead 2-1. Lastly, MLB yesterday, Cubs beat Rockies 3-1. White Sox lose to Mets 2-1, and Diamondbacks beat Pirates 5-0. Today we got rematches, Rockets at Cubs, 7:05 p.m., White Sox at Mets, 6:10 p.m., and Pirates at Diamondbacks, 8:40 p.m. Back over to you guys.
Boy, how hapless are these Rockies? 9 wins? We have Hal?
Yes, we do. How? You're on?
He must have muted himself.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm back. I had to go get a cup of coffee, and I had a cough. So.
There you go. How's your? Are you a Rockies fan? How hapless are those guys? 9 wins?
Not much of a Rockies fan. I like the Mariners and the Red Sox. I'm really a Red Sox fan. My fandom goes way back to the 1980s.
Well, then you belong at the Tripoli Tap, the Boston Bar.
Well, I spent a summer in Boston back in 2003. I had an internship with the Volpe International, or the Volpe Transportation Office right there in Cambridge, right across the street from MIT campus. Oh, it was fun. I'd walk from MIT campus every day to my apartment or room that I rented from some girl that I arranged this rental on rent.com. And I'd walk to there and from there every day. And I'd get a Dunkin' Donuts coffee in the morning, and then I'd get a pint from an Irish pub on the way home. It was so cool, that whole
Do you consider yourself?
I lost about 20 pounds.
Do you consider yourself a mass hole? That's what they call you guys from Massachusetts.
No, I don't. I don't. No, I just probably consider myself a dude. You know, like in Big Lebowski. Back then, I could put a pair of underwear in a backpack with my, you know, a clean pair of underwear and a shirt change in my backpack, my little book bag, and my laptop, and I could go anywhere and have fun.
Well, there you go. There's laundromats everywhere, as they say.
Yep.
The ones with the bar attached are usually better. You know.
I was pretty much a Metallica, Van Halen, libertarian hippie, right? That's basically what it was.
So are you, is this you here? The ultra-wealthy are increasingly moving their gold to Singapore. A growing sense of unease is driving the surge. Wealthy investors are also opting for physical gold bars instead of paper for several reasons.
Yeah, I wouldn't own. If I'm going to buy gold, I'm not going to buy the paper.
Well, no. Do you want to... Yeah. Did you in your travels in the Navy, did you ever go through Singapore?
No, we never went to Singapore. We went to Thailand. We spent a lot of time in the Middle East, Jeddah, Oman.
So when this is all on the same ship? You guys must have gone through the canal a couple times.
I didn't go through the Panama Canal, but my shipmates did a few months later when I got out. But we were basically San Diego, Bremerton, Hawaii, Southeast Asia. And we did hit Australia for 7 days, which is really cool.
Well, I mean, San Diego to Middle East, a long way. So you came back that way. You didn't come back the other way.
Yeah. We you know, the funny thing is when we first left the ship out of Bremerton was in February, and the seas were 30 foot tall. We had a 500-foot long...
Do they even care? I mean, they say, it's time for you to go, and you say, well, the weather's pretty crummy. They say, what difference does it make? Go.
No, we're going. And we were steaming, man, and the 500 guys on the ship, half of them were puking like every couple hours because it was really rough. I mean, we're climbing up a 30-foot swell and then we're slamming down on the other side of the 30-foot swell. I must have been born to be a sailor because I had no issues with seasickness whatsoever. Of course, I was in training division, and so I'm not going to get punished for this now, but I'll say it. I overplayed being seasick.
God.
I was eating 3 or 4 rations a day. I was eating breakfast, lunch, dinner, and mid-rats. And mid-rats always was Chef Bardi ravioli, which I love. And I never got sick once. But I played that hand out a little bit. You know, they expected me to be sick, so I gave them sick.
Well, how long before a storm abated? Was it like hours or days?
It was about a week. It was about a week. We were in those rough seas. It was rough. It was really rough. I mean,
can you get anywhere?
Well, you could be on deck one. And then
how fast are you going? I mean, are you getting any place?
We're only going about 5 knots, if that. We're not going very fast, I don't think.
So what's the point?
Well, the point is to be at sea. The longer you're at sea, the better chance the captain has of making rank. So you got to be at sea.
Well, if you guys are at comp sea, how fast does this thing go?
Well, our ship had an old nuclear power plant, so we were limited to 15 knots max.
15
knots. Yeah.
So you couldn't even keep up with a carrier group.
Well, we could. We just had to leave a little early. And we the funny thing is we also zigzagged all our way to Australia. If we wanted to go faster, we would straighten it out, right? When I'm driving the car and my wife says, you're on the yellow line, I go, no, I'm just straightening the curve.
Oh, God. I thought all
when
these...
we went to Australia and we wanted to pick up speed, we go in a straight line. But when we wanted to slow down, we had to zigzag, you know.
Well, I thought all these things had to go about... almost 30 knots to keep up with the carriers.
Well, but we're an older nuclear power plant. When you have an older nuclear power plant, you got to be really careful with it, because if you answer a big bell, like a full or a flank, and you go all stop, you could actually shut down the reactor.
Jesus.
We had to be really careful with our engine.
They should have left you guys in port.
Well, but, you know, the captain needed to make rank, right? So he needs to be at sea. You can't make rank if you're tied up to the pier.
I get that part.
Well, meanwhile, all the enlisted guys, especially the married guys, wanted to stay in port because it was when Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, and Nirvana had just broken, right? And so Seattle was just a fun place to hang out at that time.
Well, what do you make of this whole? I mean, it's hard to say what's going on in the world economy from a ivory tower perspective. It seems like I mean, there's always been a lot going on. I mean, there's never been a time, and that's why I love the industry so much, is there's always enough to get you out of bed and be interested. I mean, you very seldom have a really boring day, but this is like ultra non-boring. I see, you know, artificial stocks making new highs. I see stocks that seem to be preferred making this concentrated thing, and it's lasting way longer than it did in the 90s.
Yeah. I think the difference now, Tom, is you got to remember AI is the smartest person you're ever going to meet who works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, never takes any time off.
Every time I've used AI in the last 2 weeks, every time I've used AI in the last 2 weeks, it's been wrong.
Yeah, it's just a really smart person with no common sense whatsoever who gets all of their knowledge from scraping the internet. I mean, think about that, right? Basically, we have a 10-year-old. AI is like a 10-year-old who gets all their information from the internet, and it's not very mature yet. And I think, 60 to 80% of all trades are AI trades, from what I've read.
Well, they're not AI trades. They're double counted. Because people front run, very seldom do, well, I don't know the percentages, but not like they used to. It's not customer to customer. Somebody's always in the middle. Somebody's always getting paid for it, and then they turn around and trade it again. So even your volume is like double counted in a lot of places.
Yeah. I think a lot of it's driven by this 10-year-old that we've given the keys to the economy, keys to academia, keys to, you know, we got this 10-year-old AI kid who's really, really genius. But I mean, how smart can you be if you're scraping Google Chrome? Right. How smart can you be?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's right. I mean, last week I was looking for Heisman Trophy winners in schools and presidents, and the AI had Tom Brady with a Heisman Trophy, which he never got, and Ben Roethlisberger with a Heisman Trophy, which he never won. So they, you know, it's wherever you look at, it seems like it's wrong.
Grok searches web pages and X post, and X, you know, as we know, people are either, you know, sticking to left-wing talking points or right-wing talking points, and the way they get followers is to insult the other side, and then punctuate each tweet with the F word, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's where a lot of Grok gets its information from.
Well, yeah, the stuff going on back and forth between both sides, I mean, well, you listen to, unfortunately, once in a while I have to listen to Newsmax. I don't know how that station's allowed to be on the air. I mean, it's nothing but it's something would come out of something would come out of the 30s, for God's sake. You know, the hate that they spew every second.
But Tom, people on the right think the same thing about CNN and MSNBC. So we got yellow journalism. Yellow journalism has been the reality of the United States since its inception. When there wasn't a newspaper, there were pamphleteers. And you know, Tom, that's how Benjamin Franklin got really wealthy, is by having these pamphlets that he sold to people. So, I mean, journalism has always been skewed. Lincoln shut down 300 pro-Democrat newspapers during the Civil War because the Democrats were the Confederates. The Democrats were the secessionists. And he used the military to shut down 300 Democrat-friendly newspapers, right, to help him win the war, to change public opinion. So, I mean, the reality of the situation is, I mean, the world has gotten really small. I mean, we know what's going on in Taiwan, for example. We didn't know what was going on in Taiwan for maybe months or years, 100 years ago, right? We might not have
known. You still don't. I actually think we knew more when we had correspondents over there. Now we don't. I mean,
the world's just gotten really small.
It has, but you have less people reporting, it seems.
Yeah. You got more people reporting. People are reporting stuff on.
I don't consider
Twitter and Facebook.
I don't consider those people reporters. They're commentators.
Yeah. But they're reporting on stuff, right?
But it's all BS.
But they're reporting on stuff.
I consider a reporter somebody like from the Daily News that was over in Europe during World War II and actually tell you what was going on. That's a reporter, not somebody who reads his paper and gives you his opinion.
Well, one of the biggest reporters of the interwar period was Rose Wilder Lane, and she wrote this fantastic history. I think it's a little, I mean, it's skewed to the libertarian side, but she was a socialist when she was younger. But she was the highest paid journalist in the interwar period in the United States. Might have been one of the most highly paid reporters in the world at the time. But she wrote this book called The History of or the Discovery of Freedom, and it's a fascinating read. To really understand the European Union and the European nations, you have to go to her experience buying a car with her friend in Paris, France, during like the 1930s and 40s. It required like an inch thick of paper. It required a brass plate being, you know, stuck to the dashboard with four screws, and the size of the screws and the brass plate were all dictated by government. When she thinks she's got it registered, she doesn't. She's missing this brass plate. She had to take pictures of it with her standing next to the car. The car had to be imported into Paris in pieces and then put together by French mechanics. When she finally, after about 6 months of trying to get this car registered in her name legally so her and her friend could drive out of Paris, they on the way out of Paris, she had to stop and the gas tank was measured. So when she returned to Paris, that measurement could be compared to the measurement when they took when she came back, and the difference, she had to pay a tariff on that difference just into Paris. So imagine,
she should have bought a Renault or a Peugeot, some French car.
I know, but that would have been the case. You know, she wouldn't have had to pay a mechanic to build the Ford in Paris, but she would have had to go through the hoops of getting it registered. And that's probably why the legal profession is so prominent in Europe, because a rich person is not going to build this stuff.
It can't be any more prominent than it is here.
Yeah, but a rich person, I mean, she had to have an inch thick of paperwork. She had to have her income statement. She had to have her rent documented in Paris. I mean, she had to have a stack of documents just to be legal. And it took her 6 months, her and her friend working together to get this thing registered so they could take a joyride outside of Paris. Just imagine that going forward. I mean, is it much different than then? It's probably been minimized to some extent, but compared to the United States, in the United States, when you bought a car, you could probably just drive it off the lot without very much to do back in 1930. But in Paris, France...
I know that because my grandfather did that. He bought a Model A.
He just bought a car and you drove off.
He walked in
with
a couple $100 and he drove out with the car.
So that right there, the difference between the United States and Europe in general, right there, that transaction, trying to get that thing legal. And, you know, the poor people in Paris at the time lived in these slums with no windows because there was a window tax. I mean, the people working at the department stores, you had to have like layers and layers of employees just to sell a shirt. And they had to record. It was like a Napoleon law where they had to record whether the person felt.
Well, that's the reason why Britain voted to get out of the Brexit.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because it's unbelievable regulatory environment. It really is.
Well, anyway, my question is from the ivory tower view. I see interest rates.
Oh, my ivory tower is pretty low, dude. My ivory tower is about an inch off the ground.
Okay, but even so, I mean, I think we seem to have less. I think we're having employment problems. We've seen a lot of layoffs.
Yeah.
We're kicking a lot of people out of the country that we're working here. We've got people that are, we've got money for this infrastructure stuff, and yet people seem like there's you know, we're overjobbed. People can't get the people to work at the places as much as they should, as much as the budgets are there. We've got this. I find this thing with these bitcoins and things absolutely fantastic. I mean, those are like, to me, they're tulips without the flower. I mean, what exactly, when you bid Bitcoin up, it's an artificial something. We have people scrambling.
Well, to me, Bitcoin is just, you know, there's only so much of it, right? And that's why it gets so expensive to mine that last coin, because there's just so much of it.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just, without going on a long Bitcoin discussion, to me, it's the sum of it is zero. I mean, you can't use it for anything. My point is, it's essentially artificial.
Well, I don't think you say that because people trust it. There are a group of people that trust it.
Okay.
They want to engage in transactions. If they could, they would probably like to be taxes with.
I'm the one person who separates the transactional piece from the value piece.
Yeah.
I mean, should there be an alternative currency to the fiat currencies? You could probably talk me into that pretty easily.
Yeah.
But now, whether that currency becomes essentially an artificial stock, nobody who buys Bitcoin now is using it for transactions. They're using it because it's going up.
Well, yeah. I mean, but if it could be used for transactions, for taxes, for fees,
but I'm saying that's totally separate.
The volatility would all wash out, I think.
Well, okay, but I don't want to necessarily get into Bitcoin, but we have individual stuff. We have NVIDIA, which is, some people's opinion is holding the world together. Is the company doing any good, or do we have to have the president running overseas and negotiating deals with the Saudis? Because we're not going to let them give the good stuff to the Chinese, but now we're going to let them sell it to the Saudis, who may go sell it to the Chinese. What's the penalty for the Saudis if they turn around and sell it to the Chinese? What are we going to do to them? Nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It seems like there's an awful lot of balls in the air.
Well, if Chinese investors want to get a hold of NVIDIA chips, I think they're going to be able to get a hold of NVIDIA chips, because when government puts up roadblocks, what do people do? They just drive around them. So, I mean, right now we have drugs that are banned, illegal, and yet there's demand for it, and people consume those drugs. So these bans, government bans don't work, right? So
they sure as hell can work if you actually want them to work. But
demand is downward sloping, and if people want it, they're going to find a way to get it. And that's the history of Europe, right? Europe is, this book by Rosewater Lane. I was watching The Godfather one weekend, something just popped in my brain. Where does the mafia come from? It comes from all the smuggling that Europeans did to get around the king and queen's dictates. Smuggling was huge in England. Smuggling was huge throughout Europe during the feudal times, the mercantilist times, because the king and the queen, they would give monopolies, legal monopolies to people who'd collect their taxes on their behalf. And so you had all these smugglers. And that's where the mafia comes from. It comes from just smuggling. I mean, the mafia, what did it do? It smuggled alcohol. What do the cartels do? They smuggle illegal drugs in the United States. So this is not new. It's history repeating itself over and over throughout history. When government tries to ban something, it can't. It pretends to control our lives. It can't control our lives. All it can do is put us in jail, right? And under the threat of jail, people still do it.
I'm kind of on the other side of this. I think we have way too many laws.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that. And the idea of banning alcohol was, probably a pretty bad idea. Yeah. But the idea of
it was a Republican idea. It started in the 1800s with the temperance movement, right?
Yeah.
And it still lasted to this day. The temperance movement is still present in North Carolina. There are still blue counties in North Carolina. In Idaho, the town that contains the college campus, BYU Idaho, which was called Ricks College, it was a blue county. When you go to Applebee's there, you couldn't buy beer there. But I think that's changed now. Changed in the last 20 years.
You can take that to the extreme. We only got a couple minutes here, but in Illinois now we've decided we've legalized marijuana to a huge extent. I mean, whatever you want, you can buy it. And
Whether you legalize it or not, you can still buy it. It doesn't matter. I mean,
what I'm saying is, when the idea that a few people are making money at it now, which they are, now is my
But the problem with the problem with pot in Illinois, it's going to be heavily regulated, heavily taxed. You're going to have just as much black market pot.
I
probably gonna have more than what I'm that, saying is more than legitimate.
When I walk out of the office now, and I walk down the block, all I smell is pot.
Yeah.
All right, and I walk across the expressway, and I damn near get high. And when I'm driving, I see smoke.
In New York, when you're walking along the park in New York, the Brooklyn Park, people are driving by with their windows down. All you smell is pot.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, we don't seem to have any test for it for driving under the influence.
Yeah.
And when you see four jamokes in a car, it doesn't matter what color; it could be any color. And smoke pouring out the windows, and they're going 90 miles an hour, and they're passing you up. Is my life better or worse because of this? I think it's worse. How do we put something there? We have zero enforcement whatsoever. Do we really think 60% of the people on the expressway should be high? I don't think so.
One of the problems with all this drug war was that it made pot five times more potent than it used to be in the 1960s.
Oh, yeah, but it smells like skunk now. It doesn't smell at all like it did in college.
And it resulted in these drugs being concentrated. If you remember during Prohibition, what did they do? They didn't stop selling alcohol. They just started selling it in a very compact form, moonshine, right?
Well,
and you'd cut it with water. You'd cut it with something else. But it was highly concentrated. Why? When it's illegal and you could be thrown in jail for selling it or producing it, you have to concentrate it to make it more easily sellable, right? So you don't get caught. And that's what's happened to the drugs that people wanted to use, like cocaine. People were using cocaine for centuries, right? I mean, for God's sakes, it was in Coca-Cola. So people were using these drugs forever. They were in much milder forms.
Well, we got a dash, but next week, let's talk to Mike. I actually think that if you cared enough, you actually, this idea that we can never stop people from cheating, you see it in all, you see it in taxes, you see it everything here. I mean, speaking of which, the new president, whatever you want to call him, our president, this thing about no tax on tips. Hell, what in God's name is the detail on that? Now,
yeah, I don't know.
Now, if I owned a building,
I'd say no tax on income.
Okay, well, I'm with you on that, but
if I
owned a building and some guy comes by and shovels the snow and cuts the grass, and I pay him $50 a week.
Well, what's going to happen, Tom, is everybody's going to want to pay in tips, right?
Well, that's where I'm going. I mean, if I pay him $50 a week, once he gets to $600, I'm supposed to...
I'm going to ask the university to be paid in tips.
Well, I'm saying instead of giving him $50, do I give him a check for $1 and 49 in tips?
So
he never has to report. Do you have to report the tips and not...
You know, if you really think about it, when you go to a restaurant and you pay a tip, they always wanted you to give cash, not
I understand that it's underreported. Okay, it always has been. But still, they've gotten pretty clear on that, that if you're in a place and your tickets go up to $1,000 and you say you got no tips, that's not going to work. They probably imply 12% and maybe you can actually make 20. So you can abscond with the 8, but that's different than saying it's not income. What do you mean it's not income? It is for you.
Well, the funny thing is, how is this going to affect New York commerce? Because, man, I'll tell you, dealing with contractors in New York City, good ones and bad ones, they're all looking for tips. They're looking for those. If you don't pay with a credit card, I'll give you it tax free with cash. I mean, I've heard.
Now you can pay with a credit card. You can say the toilet's $100, the tip is $900.
It just makes it legal.
Is there a limit on this?
It makes tax free tipping legal, essentially. It's like NIL, right? It's making pain players legal, right? So you're making fewer criminals.
Whatever. Anyway, you have a good week. You got you're between semesters here, I assume.
Yeah, I'm working on my history of economic thought class. I'm going to start teaching in the fall. I'm working on that right now.
You know what? Maybe I'll do you a favor and I'll dig for my notes from when I had a two-semester one of those.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Just, you know, you could scan them. Don't fax them, but scan them.
These are my notes. You can't read them. I got to read them to you.
You'll have to translate them.
S&P Futures up 76, NASDAQ Futures up 306. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.